The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
I want to tell you why what's happening in the Middle East is something that we all need to care about, why it matters to you. Evangelical pastor Andrew Brunson was arrested 18 months ago and sent to a Turkish prison. He was charged with funding a terror organization. Okay. He's a terrorist? Well, he was one of the, quote, terrorists and, quote, jailed in the aftermath of the 2016 failed coup d'etat. Journalists, academics, soldiers, teachers, and Christians were deemed terrorists. According to Brunson, his crime is, in fact, his faith, his belief in Christianity. He's lived in Turkey now for 23 years, and the Turkish government claims that he's involved with the Gulen movement. In reality, it's likely a power play by the Turkish president, Erdogan, who is paranoid that the coup was orchestrated by the U.S. He's furious. He's also tantrum prone, and he's an authoritarian leader. So regardless, the persecution of Christians in that region is subject of many conversations that we have here on the program, and also the subject of something that we are going to air soon, Faith Keepers. It's a documentary that we're going to be showing on Wednesday, April 18th. This is an amazing thing on what's happening over in the Middle East that most people are not talking about. They're not showing it to you. We'll have the documentary's producers on the 18th and some of the collaborators on the 19th, and it is eye-opening. It will, and in some ways it makes you ashamed that you claim to be a Christian because of what real Christians are standing up against. It's chilling, but it is also inspiring. Christians in the Middle East and North Africa, and now increasingly in Europe, face hardships of the most depraved and terrifying kind for no other reason but their faith, or miraculously the lack or willingness to accept another faith. Faith Keepers, it's a metric for the growing persecution that Christians are confronted with every day, just not us. We talk about persecution, religious bigotry. Last hour I told you about Chick-fil-A in New York. Yeah, that's religious bigotry, but not like what's happening around the world. It's crucial that we take notice every time something like the imprisonment of this pastor in Turkey takes place, because it is likely going to happen more and more often, more open, and much more violently in the days to come.
It's Monday, April 16th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So, a couple of weeks ago, some audio was brought to my attention from Pat, whose kid was in KDISD, the Independent School District in Houston, Texas. And there is a school superintendent there who is kind of embroiled in a controversy now, because a man came to the school district meeting and stood up and said, "I want to talk about the bullying that is going on in schools right now." He called out the school superintendent at the end. I want you to hear the story. Listen.
My name is Greg Barrett. I graduated from KSD in 1983. I started in 1975 with Mr. Lance. My legal name is Greg Gay. I was bullied, unbelievably bullied. I started out and I had teachers that bullied me. I had kids that bullied me, even the coaches. I had nobody to turn to. One day at lunch, I had my head shoved in the urinal where it busted my lip. I had laid on the ground in a fetal position as the kids kicked me. I got up, I rinsed my face off, I walked out of the lunchroom, walked straight to the principal's office, and he told me, "These kids will grow up someday. They won't always be like this." But yet, here I am, covered in urine from laying on the ground underneath the urinal. My lip was busted, and they sent me home. Well, I went home, and I got the 45 out of my father's drawer and put it in my mouth. Because at this point, I had nobody in the school system to help me. Is that the way this is going to be? Lance, you were the one that shoved my head in the urinal.
Wow. Powerful, powerful moment. Now, Lance, the school district superintendent, said, no, that's not true. I was not that guy. And thus the controversy. Greg Barrett, the guy you just heard speaking, is joining us now from Houston. Hello, Greg. How are you?
I'm just fine, sir.
That was a powerful testimony. It's my understanding that that was not, you were not going to out Lance Hint when you first stood up. Can you tell us the
Absolutely not.
Can you tell us a story on how you got there?
Well, I was sitting there. I'd signed up, and I was sitting in the audience waiting to speak.
On behalf of Sean Dolan, right?
Yes.
Can you explain that?
Sean was in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And after he finished speaking, Lance, you know, basically embarrassed him and said, your deceased son was not even in KISD, which was true. But his son that was being bullied was in KISD, and he was being bullied because he had confided in his classmates about his brother dying of this disease. And so they were teasing him about it, and he was coming home crying. Well, Sean went up there to try to do something, and they denied that it was happening.
And so that, and so when he said, well, your dead son didn't even go to school, that kind of angered you.
Oh, absolutely. It infuriated me. I couldn't believe I was watching this happen in front of my face. He was basically bullying him right in front of my face. And so then, you know, I was nervous, and then it turned to anger. And, you know, so when I went up to the podium, I was angry. And then as I was telling my story, the emotions kind of took over because I was like reliving the story. And here he is sitting right in front of me, you know, 5 feet in front of me, and he's smiling. And I could see other board members smiling like it was a joke. And it just infuriated me. So I called him out at the end and walked away before I really got ugly.
I have to tell you, we've watched it over and over as a crew here, and we had the opposite. None of us were smiling. We were horrified by the story. Now, he denies that you even went to school with him, does he not?
Yes, he denied anything towards this whatsoever. And we've had multiple people come forward. Some of them I didn't even know. But one man, Chris Dolan, who is not related to Sean Dolan, came forward 2 years ago and invited me to a car show here in Katy out of the blue. And I went. And he gave me a big hug, and he said, I am sorry for the way that you were treated. And he said, I'm sorry I didn't stand up for you.
So he was not part of that urinal kicking down.
No.
But he didn't.
No, he came into the bathroom as I was walking out.
And he has lived with the cowardice. His own cowardice, and that's what he was apologizing for?
Yes.
Can you tell me, Greg, I'm shocked that the superintendent has not admitted this. You have a district judge in, I think, Louisiana, or is it, what is he? Is it in Alabama?
I think it's in Alabama.
And do you know him?
No.
And he has come out and said, this is exactly who this guy was. He was a bully. Who is Mark McCool, which I have to tell you is the opposite of your name. I mean, I would have paid to be McCool as my last name. But
I've told him that.
So who is Mark McCool? Do you know him?
I know him through my sister because they were in the same grade.
Okay.
But I never knew this happened to him until just the other day. He travels. He drives an 18-wheeler.
Okay.
And so he just happened to be here and saw all of this and posted his story as well.
And what's his story?
Well, he was walking home from West Memorial Junior High, which was the same school I went to. And Lance and his buddy, which were in high school at the time, were down at the bayou. And when they walk home from school, they have to walk across a pipe to cross the bayou so you don't have to walk through the mud. And they were trying to walk across the pipe, and they were yelling at him and hollering at him, hoping that they would fall off the pipe. And when Mark McCool and his friend got to the other side of the pipe, they shot him the finger and ran. Well, Lance and his buddy, they chased him down, caught him, held him at knife point, and made him go back to the bayou and roll all the way across the bayou in the mud to get to the other side.
One more story. There's also somebody that came to attention, I think, from the reporting on a Fox station, that there was charges that were filed against the superintendent when he was, I think, 18 years old. And he apparently was racing his car loudly down a street, and some neighbor came out and said, "Knock it off!" And he backed up and beat the guy into a 5-day coma. There were no I guess battery charges, or the charges were dropped, and so he's kind of denying this as well, but there seems to be a pattern here on Lance.
Yes, and that was settled out of court for the man's medical bills.
$30,000 of medical bills, by the way.
Yes.
I'm curious, Greg, if you had brought up this incident from your childhood with Lance, and Lance, instead of blowing it off or smiling, had responded, you know, "I was a really bad kid. I did some really terrible things. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm taking bullying seriously now." And you learned his lessons from those days and tried to utilize them today. Would your reaction have been different? What would you have taken from that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I forgave him a long time ago. You know, I forgave all of them for what they did many years ago. That was all water under the bridge until I saw Sean's post about his son, and he needed somebody to come forward to bring attention to bullying and how it scars you for life. I mean, this is a scar I will carry forever. You know, these guys are forgiven, but it's a scar I'll always have. And I don't want this school district that my family has been in since 1898, my family has gone through this school system. And you can't imagine the amount of relatives that have gone through this school system. It would horrify me to see something like Parkland happen here.
Greg, we've had people reach out and say that you're just a front, that you've been hired or paid off to do these things, to get at this superintendent because he has taken tough positions. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think that's hilarious because I'm the one that keeps saying he shouldn't lose his job. Watch every single news interview. I have always said he is the person to fix this. He went all the way through the system, junior high, high school, being a bully the entire way we know now. See, I didn't know all of this stuff about high school and all this other stuff. I had no idea.
Yeah.
But to me, he's the perfect person to fix this because he knows the loopholes.
I will tell you.
He knows why he got away with it.
I will tell you that we talked about that on Friday when we were talking about you. We said the two of you should travel the country. If he would have admitted and said, yeah, boy, I was a bad kid, and you two are the perfect story. I mean, you're the perfect story. Do you ever think of the principal that told you he won't always be like this? And you're finding out now that, oh, my gosh, maybe he is?
Yes. Yes, I've thought about that. But some of what that principal said was true, because once we got into high school, I mean, there were a few kids, you know, that still called me gay Greg or whatever. But we had all matured and, you know, and I mean, it was kind of blown off. But I mean, still to this day, when I go to a restaurant, I don't give them my last name Gay. You know, I say Happy. You know, it's kind of a running joke around here. You know, I mean, you give them your last name Gay at a restaurant, they say, Gay, party of four. Everybody stops and looks.
Greg, thank you for sharing your story. And I'm glad that I don't think that we're the people that that they were. We were when I was growing up as well. We're about the same age. And thank you for sharing your story. And quite honestly, I hope that everybody finds their way to forgiveness, and you all set a great example for the rest of the nation that people can change. Thank you so much, Greg.
Thank you.
So I want to talk to you about Bitcoin. You see in the news, Stu.
Glenn Beck.
What do you think of the James Comey interview, Stu?
Enthralled, Glenn. Fully enthralled.
Yeah.
By it. I did watch it yesterday, and now that we're on hour three towards the end of the show and we haven't talked about it yet, it makes me feel like I've wasted my time completely.
Well, I don't want to waste your time. We want to go over it because there are a few clips that we need to play. And I've got a few things to say, as I'm sure you do. We'll do that when we come back.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Let's spend a couple of minutes on James Comey. ABC did a 5-hour interview with him. 5 hours. I mean, you want to talk about a grilling. And here are the highlights that we thought were worth talking about. Let's play first Comey on Hillary.
Try to realize that I'm not trying to help a candidate or hurt a candidate. I'm trying to do the right thing. And you can come up with different conclusions. Reasonable people would have chosen a different door for reasonable reasons. But it's just not fair to say we were doing it for some illegitimate reason.
But at some level, wasn't the decision to reveal influenced by your assumption that Hillary Clinton was going to win and your concern that she wins? This comes out several weeks later, and then that's taken by her opponents as a sign that she's an illegitimate president.
It must have been. I don't remember consciously thinking about that, but it must have been. Because I was operating in a world where Hillary Clinton was going to beat Donald Trump. And so I'm sure that it was a factor. Like I said, I don't remember spelling it out, but it had to have been, that she's going to be elected president, and if I hide this from the American people, she'll be illegitimate the moment she's elected, the moment this comes out.
Do you even begin to understand that? I mean, he doesn't say it, and then Stephanopoulos gives him this scenario. You know, wouldn't you say it was this? Well, I don't recall that at all, but it must have been. What?
Right.
That's a pretty big decision you made. What do you mean you don't remember?
I guess he's just saying it was a foregone conclusion at that point. Remember, this is the era right after the Access Hollywood tape comes out. She goes to the biggest lead she's had in the entire campaign. And at that point, I mean, it did seem that Hillary was going to win. And so he's trying to make the argument that subconsciously that's the environment I'm in. So I'm sure it was a factor, but he never spelled it out specifically in his head. It's just a weird thing because he goes on at length in other parts of the interview talking about how politics was never a factor. He never considered it. He never thought about politics. He was just trying to do the right thing. But he allows for the idea that the right thing was influenced by politics. So it's a kind of a circuitous reasoning in some ways.
All right. Here is the clip. Donald Trump is unfit to be president.
Is Donald Trump unfit to be president?
Yes, but not in the way I often hear people talk about it. I don't buy the stuff about him being mentally incompetent or early stages of dementia. He strikes me as a person of above average intelligence who's tracking conversations and knows what's going on. I don't think he's medically unfit to be president. I think he's morally unfit to be president. A person who sees moral equivalence in Charlottesville, who talks about and treats women like they're pieces of meat, who lies constantly about matters big and small and insists the American people believe it, that person's not fit to be president of the United States on moral grounds. And that's not a policy statement. Again, I don't care what your views are on guns or immigration or taxes. There's something more important than that that should unite all of us, and that is our president must embody respect and adhere to the values that are at the core of this country, the most important being truth. This president is not able to do that.
Okay, I just want to... Morally unfit. Morally unfit. And I don't want to play, well, you guys did it too, but would Comey say that Clinton was morally unfit? Because did you hear what he said? He's got to treat women right.
And he lies all the time.
He lies all the time. Bill Clinton?
Clinton, completely unfit by that standard.
I mean, we'd all agree that Nixon was unfit.
Mm-hmm.
How about LBJ, who was
a
horrible, horrible racist.
Mm-hmm.
Horrible racist.
Unfit.
Who lied? Unfit.
Mm-hmm.
How about treat women and lies all the time? How about JFK?
Mm-hmm.
How about FDR, who had a mistress on the side? How about FDR, who lied about a lot of things? How about FDR? You want to talk about a bad guy just scooping up the Japanese, even though his own administration said there is no threat from the Japanese, and puts him in an internment camp because he's a racist. How about Woodrow Wilson, who is constantly the fifth greatest president of all time?
Surprised we ended up with Woodrow there.
Yeah.
I'm really stunned in your list.
I mean, I'm morally unfit.
Yes.
I wonder if he would put others in that category.
It doesn't seem like he mentions a couple times talking about how he would single Trump out as opposed to other presidents he's served under or presidents from history. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone would come out in that way, but he did signal Trump out as worse a couple of times. And you kind of hear the
that's saying something.
Yeah, like you see both sides.
I mean, it says something about him, yes. Not about Trump.
He says something on both sides about Comey, too. Because there's two parts of this. One is, let me give you two points. One good for Comey, one bad for Comey. Comey is, I think, you hear him throughout this give ground. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, he says Trump is an above average mm-hmm. Intelligence. Mm-hmm. And he, mm-hmm. you know, when he was talking, there's another clip that everyone was playing about mob. Just he's like, he's not a mobster. He just demands loyalty like mobsters do. He constantly was equivocating and giving ground, mm-hmm. which to an average person, remember, 99% of people don't sit around and think about these issues, don't mm-hmm. know Comey's background, don't know him as a quote-unquote mm-hmm. grandstander, just we'll see a clip of him. And I think that helps him as far as credibility goes to the average person who doesn't follow this closely, because he's willing to say things that I think hurt his case at times. Mm-hmm. He went on at length about how, well, I wasn't sure if I handled something, you know, something right, where he was talking about loyalty, the loyalty pledge conversation, which was reported that he kind of, I'll be honest with you, and that's it. Comey's actual quote was, I'll give you, he agreed to giving him honest loyalty, which I don't know what that means. Exactly.
But different than blind loyalty.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, but I mean, honest, you know, loyalty is a weird thing in that, you know, it's easy to be loyal to someone when you completely agree with them and they're doing everything right. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, the loyalty, in a way, demands in tough times that you're staying with someone. But honest loyalty, okay. It was, as he put it, a compromise. But it was also something that, where he's giving ground, and I think that might connect with the average person watching it for the first time. On the other side of that, he has a problem that someone like Megyn Kelly also has, which is he does not have a constituency.
Nobody likes him.
There's no one who actually likes James Comey.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Comey family, I don't think, because they showed a clip with his wife, who's a huge Hillary supporter. His family, his wife and daughters, were marching in the Women's March, right? You think they're happy he released that that letter 10 days before the election? I bet you no.
And I just saw a bunch of interviews with people from the FBI who are all mad at him, too.
Right. So you have, and now if you think about the normal, typical left-right divide in this country, and this happened with Megyn Kelly. Megyn Kelly was loved for a long time by the right, because she was on Fox and largely was taking the left to task on that show. And she was hated at the same time by the left. They didn't like her for a really long time. Then when she took on Trump, the right said, we don't like you. And the left said, we love you. When she gets her own show and she's past that circumstance, what she has is neither side being passionately for her. And the same thing that happens with James Comey here is that I listened to a lot of coverage about this afterwards, kind of hear the reaction. And one of the things you notice is the left can't universally bring themselves to say he's a good guy and doing the right thing, because they're so pissed off about the letter 10 days before the election that they can't universally heap praise on him. He's useful to them now. And they will say all the things that he said in the interview were great, but I can't get past the idea that he did X, Y, and Z right before the election. And of course, the same thing with the Trump side of the argument, who, if you remember the 10 days between the letter and the election, he was universally praised by the right.
Loved.
There are quote after quote after quote after quote about how wonderful this guy was and how he was honest about Hillary Clinton. Now he's a big enemy and everybody on the right doesn't like him. So no one on the right really likes him, and no one on the left can bring themselves to praise him in a universal fashion. So he doesn't even get the benefit of the partisan divide. And I think that is going to be, in the end of the day, you can say that's the right thing to do, but it's not going to make him an effective person in this debate, I don't think. They're going to have to still get a lot more than this, because in the end, what he did was further clarify some details of what he already testified about. There's nothing in this book that we haven't already heard. There's nothing in this book that is new, and we are in a culture that needs new.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've heard the criticism of Comey, which I think is somewhat fair. In that, here he is, if this is such an important message, why are you bringing it to us in a book? We're going to make a lot of money. I think it's a fair criticism.
I do too.
But you have to take out the fact that if he really wanted to just get a payday, he should have somehow avoided testifying and telling the story, all these stories beforehand.
Yeah.
Because these are all the stories from the book. And if you watched the interview yesterday, all the stories were stories you had already heard from his testimony. And all he is adding a little bit of color, a little bit of detail from behind the scenes, but really not much more that's new.
Glenn Beck.
So I went to see Bill Murray and friends in concert. And, you know, I was smart enough to go online and look at, what does a Bill Murray concert look like? Well, let me tell you. It looks like this. Imagine a school talent show with really unbelievable musicians. And Bill Murray shows up once in a while, like every, you know, maybe every half hour, like, you know, 3 minutes. And then there's just some kid reading poetry and he's not that good at it. That's what that's like.
What?
It's the most bizarre theater experience I've ever had in my life.
So is it like a variety show?
No.
He's hosting?
Kind of. No. I mean, I don't know what it is. It's Bill Murray going, I'm almost 70. I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. And it is funny at times, really funny. But he just is reading disconnected poetry and play cuttings and doing songs and then singing, and he's not good, but he's singing seriously. Now, there's a couple of times where he's singing and it's intentionally bad, but it's no different than when he's not intentionally bad. And it's just bizarre. I mean, a lot of people walked out. This couple was sitting in front of me and they were like, I don't know, should we walk out? That'd be rude. And I'm like, you know what's rude? Is you two sitting here talking about it all the time. Just get out. He doesn't care. Just get out.
You already paid him.
Yeah, you paid him. He doesn't care. He opens the show and he's like, okay, all right, the worst part is over, which was not true. The worst part is over. If you need to walk out, I understand. We see it all the time. And so he admits it. He knows it. And I have to tell you, I enjoyed it, but I enjoyed the courage that it took. I thought he was exceptional in parts. He read part of Huck Finn when I can't remember the name of the slave escapes and Huck Finn is on the raft with him. And he reads this whole thing using the N-word and everything. And he reads it really well. He plays all the characters and it's really good.
If you're telling me the hook here is that he read Huck Finn well, that's not exactly a commercial for the show.
No, I don't know how to explain it, except it's like a really weird talent show that has no theme to it that I could find.
What about the parts where he's not on the stage? What's happening?
The musicians are playing. He's on stage the whole time, but he just sits down in a chair, and the musicians are playing, and they are awesome. But they're classical. It's a violinist, cellist, and a pianist. And they're playing stuff, and it's bizarre. It's just bizarre. I enjoyed it, but then again, I like weird things.
Right.
I would not recommend this to people who are just like, you know what? I have a good time. Let's go.
I loved Caddyshack.
Yeah, like, no, that's not. This no, isn't the thing that's to do. Not it.
Okay.
That's not it.
Because I think from a strange, I love who he is and that he just doesn't care about anything anymore.
That's what I liked.
And that's probably what I would get out of that. It's just the balls to go up there and just do whatever you
just
feel
do
like.
Whatever you want.
Because he's beyond FU money.
Yeah.
He's just an FU life at this point. He just doesn't care.
Yeah.
Which is kind of interesting.
And tomorrow I have to tell you about the Quiet Place. I saw The Quiet Place.
A Quiet Place?
A Quiet Place. And I saw Rampage over the weekend. I was busy. I had a double feature with my son on Friday afternoon and a night out with my daughter on Saturday. But we'll give you those reviews tomorrow. But if you see Bill Murray, if you come into town, think about it. Watch it online first. You might enjoy it.
Back.
Or you might walk
Mercury.
Out.
Mercury.